Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Krang, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kale Teeter, and Russell Young, discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on LinkedIn.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Azure Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Basilik, and here with my co-host, Sujit DeMello. We've got a handful of folks here today to talk about the VM repair extension. We'll get to that in just a sec. Today is April 30th, and this is episode number 519, and we're talking about, like I said, VM repair upgrades. So before we get to our special guest, Sujit, it looks like you put some news out here. I don't love the new Azure updates.
You don't?
URL structure, because they're just article IDs. It doesn't tell you anything about it until you go to the deep link.
Correct.
I'm sure that's a personal problem and not a bug. So.
Yeah, I do like the fact that they put the links at least now, so you can easily link back into the specific update. So that was useful for me.
Yeah.
So I have a few that I think might be of interest to our listeners. The first is in Azure Container Instances. And this one is very close to me because I've used ACI before, but it's somewhat limited, or used to be limited, because the max you could have was, like, I think, 4 vCPUs and 16 GB in a container, right? So, yeah, I mean, I guess that meets a number of use cases, but I've been working on a lot of Monte Carlo simulations recently, and I need more than 4 vCPUs sometimes, and so just can't do it in an ACI. Well, now you can. That's the good news, right? So now they've increased that to 32 vCPUs and 256 GB in a container group. So this can allow you for much more larger use cases for doing compute-sensitive work. And if you're using confidential computers, computing, then it's 32 vCPUs and 192 GB is the max. So that, I think that's a useful update. Another one that caught my eye, and I don't know if you were going to discuss this, Evan, but it's in the networking space, and this is
the Metro thing.
Well, this one is the virtual network tap. Okay.
Oh, the VTAP.
The terminal access point. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but this is very cool. I think in the on-prem world, you know, we're used to having things like sniffers and whatnot that would kind of, you know, sniff all the traffic on the network and have a single point where you can go and analyze everything. Yeah, now this is the Azure equivalent to it. They've made it a single, like a streaming endpoint for all network traffic to be sent to. And this way you could plug in your individual tool that you may have and, you know, capture all that traffic and do whatever analysis you have to do, right? Be it for debugging or security analysis or anything else like that. So I think that's another useful
Absolutely.
Update.
Yeah, I've been watching this. I had lost track that it had finally shipped GA, but we've been sort of watching this closely on my side because, you know, network captures is, you know, under my purview these days, again, from a problem space. And yes, it is difficult to manage. Making this easier is great.
Now, I know none of us like those capture things that you have to do when you get into a website and you have to enter some of the special symbols. but fortunately, WAF now includes capture challenge for Azure Frondo. So if you use WAF, obviously there's a good advantage to having that in your flow, in your application. It avoids bots, brute force attacks and things like that. So for sure, it's a good thing. So now without much effort, you can just enable.
Is CAPTCHA a solution or a generic concept? Is that a service in and of itself, or is that something? It's like a generic term, sort of like the difference between like a Q-tip and, like, technically a Q-tip is a brand, but it gets used as a generic thing. Is CAPTCHA a generic thing, or is that a specific company? I honestly don't know.
I thought it was a generic thing. I forget what the exact acronym stands for, but it was a generic thing. I think it's been around for many years. I think the guy who eventually, I think he was with Google, and he was bought by Google after he came up with this CAPTCHA idea, and then he started Duolingo.
Okay. So then it became a generic thing.
Yeah, so it's become a generic thing at that point.
Okay.
Okay, so next up is, so this is another interesting one. If you use AKS and you've got different workloads, like different groups of applications running, and you know, and you can only configure one log analytics workspace. So all these workloads get mixed up into this one workspace. And now, you know, when you're going to do log querying, you got to figure out, okay, which are my logs? How do I filter my, you know, my set of logs for my team or my group or whatever? So you couldn't do that. Now you can actually route different namespaces, like for example, right, to go to different log analytic workspaces. So you can say this namespace goes to this. So this way you kind of separate things out nicely. Even like system logs can go to one log analytics namespace, and user logs can go somewhere else. So there's all these options now that you have available to split the logging traffic. So again, I think very useful. And the last one I have is kind of, this is sort of new stuff that's going on in the AI space with the Model Context Protocol, which is a new way for agents to get additional context when they're running all the new agents that are out there. And so there's these things called MCP or MCP servers that you would write to provide all the additional context to the LLM. And typically you would have to, you know, host your own agent and then, you know, but now there's a lot of public, not public, but there's MCP servers that you can run locally. The thing is that if you're running functions, you can't really run all servers in your functions. Your function is supposed to be this lightweight thing. But now you could, you know, you could configure functions to connect to these MCP servers automatically, so that when you're running an LLM in a function, you can reference the additional context from these MCPs and basically run. And Microsoft will host the MCPs for you. So that's, you know, part of the thing, part of the old solution. All right, so that's the updates that I had.
Yeah, I want to. The only one I want to talk about is the Azure Metro or ExpressRoute Metro expansion. We actually had, you know, Dong on the other day talking about Azure Gateway Resiliency, and we talked about the Metro service a little while back, which this is really about physically disassociating the two physical links that make up your logical link into two different buildings. And it's actually, I think, it's two different service providers as well. And that really gives you the extra layer of resiliency, you know, over sort of a larger building infrastructure failure. And then there's some rules around how many miles have to be in between them for latency reason and whatnot. But I definitely encourage people to check that out. ExpressRoute is critical for lots of customers, and lots of customers are not as resilient there as they should be. Okay, great. So given that news, joined by our special guest, Adam Sandor, Travis Mayer, and Leslie Chow to talk about the VM repair extension. I guess before we get into the extension itself, why don't y'all start with introduce yourselves and tell us what you do here at Microsoft? Because y'all are a little bit slightly atypical roles, right? Y'all hang out with people like me a lot of times instead of, you know, sitting building, you know, some Metro, you know, Azure, ExpressRoute Metro feature, sort of in a different world partnering with us.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Adam Sander, like you said, software engineer here on Azure Compute and AI. I own the VM repair extensions, why we're all here today. Working on a lot of supportability stuff too, as a supportability center, some guided troubleshooters on the VM the VM portal in Azure, and a few other things. But that's me. Oh, and I love fencing.
That might be the first fencing reference we've had in 10 years.
I'm bringing it back.
Awesome. Leslie.
Yeah, I'm Leslie, a technical program manager under OneFleet Platform. I am on the Azure Core's portability PM team. So I help kind of bridge support and engineering together to understand customer pain and try to develop quality improvements to products to kind of address those.
Yeah, thanks. Leslie and I are on the same team. So we're part of Azure Core focused on, you know, like she said, quality when it comes to networking, storage, compute, containers. And I think we'll probably talk more about it. But when it comes to supportability, we're really looking at the customer's lens, trying to understand the most common pain points that are driving the most pain for customers, and really going into extreme detail in understanding those programmatically, and then being able to have diagnostics that run, right, allow us to anticipate the kind of issues the customer may run into and help set appropriate guardrails so that customers are successful in their you know, adoption of the platform and making sure that they don't need to go to our terrific support team, right, too often. We always want to have the support organization there to help with very challenging issues. But when we see recurring issues, that kind of raises red flags that we want to address, and that's what we're all about.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for the shout out, Travis. But yeah, it's a great partnership, right, between the support organization and the supportability organization, because, and I usually describe it as like y'all are about deflecting and sort of reducing the effort it takes to resolve something. But obviously there's an element, some percentage of these that are going to come through. We address those and partner with y'all on that. But the best case is one that doesn't come to us. Yeah. At all. And so I guess that's really where I start my question, right? So this VM repair extension, Adam, are you trying to put me out of a job here? Like what's the goal with this extension?
I'm just trying to make life easier for the customer. Okay.
And, okay. That's fair. Okay. I'll let you get away with that.
Yeah, I can go in more detail into the VM repair side, but let's, Travis, do you want to say anything about the supportability side first?
Yeah, I think, you know, Evan, you talked a little bit about the support team, right? And yeah. And some of the work that we're doing, you know, it's creating a better understanding of the issues and the root causes that customers are facing. So we spend a lot of time looking at customer journeys, right, within Portal. Also, you know, customer use of CLI and PowerShell and third-party tools. We do this in a very compliant and safe way, right? We're not looking at anything that we're not entitled to view, but we're really interested in understanding exactly where, you know, if we use Portal as an example, where customers are running into these challenges before they reach out to the support team, before they engage with our troubleshooting tools. And that helps to kind of center us around exactly what we want to deliver and what scenarios we want to prioritize. So I think Adam had mentioned some of our investments recently in guided troubleshooters that are very targeted at specific customer pain scenarios, using those diagnostics to validate the symptoms that a customer is facing, and then using, you know, various APIs and backend systems that we have to identify the root cause in a perfect world. But coming back to the support organization, what we're really trying to do is get more out of the tools that we're developing. And even for customers that maybe continue to face pain, we want to bring that visibility to the support engineers as soon as that case comes in, right? So they understand the customer journey, what the customer was having problems with, and not be, you know, completely dependent on the customer's description when they file a support request. Oftentimes customers are very, it could be a rough time, right? They're facing a critical situation. We need to automatically gather as much information we can to supplement what the customer tells us in the case, allowing us to move further. So, you know, absolutely, the customer is our main focus, but by extension of that, enabling, empowering the support team with similar tools is also a big part of supportability.
Absolutely, yeah, it's a great partnership. You know, the best work that we do is when we're really working together to move it forward, right? When we work in isolation, we're both missing part of the puzzle, you know, for sure.
Yeah. Let's let me give an example of what VM repair can do in the supportability space. We can turn the clock back a year, so almost a year, and imagine that there's an update that goes out, global outage of virtual machines across the nation, across the world.
I'm having painful flashbacks here, Adam.
Hey, I was in an airport at 6 a.m. when I heard about this. Okay, yeah. I was stuck.
Yeah.
I was not one of the lucky few on Southwest where they still were still working.
Yeah.
So that happens. Oh, no. Your engineers are scrambling, trying to figure out what's going on. You're stuck in an airport on the phone, trying to get a refund, trying to go home before 3 p.m. And then imagine one of your engineers, they actually figure out the problem before the media reports on it, like a couple hours after the update. They do some testing. They figure, oh, I just need to remove these two files from this update. And boom, my VMs work. They're able to boot. And then I can take that script that I use and I can upload it, open source, get it reviewed, and then Microsoft kind of stamps its approval on that. Say, okay, we've merged this to our open source repository. We know this fixes the issue. That's actually what happened with CrowdStrike.
Yeah.
Like Thursday night.
Yeah, we were doing stuff real time and pushing stuff. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember who, but somebody merged in a repair script to our open source repo for our VM repair scripts. It fixed for most of the customers fixed the CrowdStrike issue and unblocked people. And we just didn't have a lot of like messaging and like insight and visibility into that place. So it was kind of like a few people on Reddit and some customers who found out, like, oh, this is Unblocks, that's great. That's what we're trying to offer. And like, you can make your own scripts, get them reviewed and merged, or just use a bunch of scripts that we already provide to fix known issues or common issues, and run them yourself to test it safely, verify it works, and then boom, put it back into prod.
Yeah, Adam, you know, when you say scripts, I don't know, are these like PowerShell? I think you said PowerShell scripts. Are these PowerShell scripts that people are writing? It feels a little bit almost dangerous to have allow people to write like scripts that run on VMs, right? We all know how that could go wrong. And I know they're, as you said, they are reviewed and checked and whatnot. But what are the security implications of, you know, allowing like just scripts to be run on VMs written by the public, essentially?
Yeah, absolutely. These are PowerShell and Bash scripts as well. So for this, we provide a couple of different commands in Veeam Repair to help mitigate those concerns. For one, there are three commands that you run for like a typical scenario. One is the create command. So the create command, you don't want to run these scripts in prod immediately. We create a copy of your targeted VM that's broken, for instance. Make a new VM based off of it. You can customize it as well a little bit. And most importantly, we take the OS disk from the broken VM, copy it over to the new VM as a data disk so you can actually run operations again. And then you can test your script on it there. And so you're not testing on prod, thankfully. You're on this other resource. You can verify things yourself. And once you're happy with it, then you can run, you use the run command to run your script. And then when you're happy with it, you run the restore command. And the restore command takes that data disk that is actually a copied OS disk and can reattach it to the targeted, originally broken VM once you're happy with the script and the everything there.
What do you, I mean, sort of an extension of what Sajid was asking, because I mean, when I think about this, like there's sort of infinite possibilities, because even though we ship Windows and, you know, we contribute heavily to Linux these days, there is still this massive ecosystem of people out there that, you know, figure out ways to do things that we just either haven't put together, or, man, if I went and asked this one dev who wrote this one function 20 years ago, they'd say, oh yeah, you can set this registry key to do it, but like, it's just not well known, right? And so we don't necessarily think to do it. And so it's great to leverage that ecosystem, but like, what do we recommend as far as, should I go run scripts? You know, even if it's PR'd and we think it's okay, you know, are we recommending to that? Or do we recommend, hey, you know, here's sort of a Microsoft list that we are very confident that they're safe. And then, hey, here's this other subset that are your organizations, or like what options do I have to sort of frame my risk, levels of risk, as I'm going through running these?
Well, all of the scripts that we have in our repair script repo have been approved by our team, tested, and verified. So those are kind of the, I guess, gold standard scripts used all the time by our support engineers and outside customers.
Yep.
Then I'm sure there are other scripts in like blogs and other places, but we haven't, you know, stamped our approval on those. And you can make your own scripts and pass them in. So really, you either use the kind of Microsoft approved ones over here, or kind of make your own, or kind of go out to the marketplace of ideas and just see what works for you.
Okay.
And of course, because this is a CLI extension on the Azure module, going back to one of Sujit's concerns about security, of course, all of the RBAC and other permissions are in place. You got to have an Azure credential you're logged in as to even touch that has access to the VMs, has edit access to the VMs to even run these commands.
And I would assume, you know, all of our, because this is just running commands within the VM, all of our standard, you know, network security groups and, you know, all that type of infrastructure controls as well beyond RBAC, they apply, because at the end of the day, it's just a command running inside the VM. It's not special, you know, outside of that context.
Exactly. Kind of going off of the infrastructure requirements there, you said, that was some of the recent updates that I pushed out, was supporting public IPs, supporting different OS disk storage account types. So it used to be that all the VM repair created kind of copied over VMs were all premium disks. But now you can customize those, because we saw, especially for private IPs, for non-premium disks, we saw that a lot of customers were wanted to use VM Repair, but they had environment restrictions like not allowing premium or now not allowing public IPs for security or cost reasons.
This is like subscription level or tenant level restrictions on the subscriptions.
Yeah, or environment level. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so sometimes they wanted to use VM Repair, but they just couldn't. So we provide that customization to kind of set up the VM a little bit more in detail to abide by their restrictions there.
I'm trying to understand the user experience for these scripts, right? Of course, the support, someone from a support team, the customer might run it first. So first, okay, the VM's in trouble. It's clearly throwing some error message when it boots up or something like that in the Azure portal. I suppose it'll probably say unable to start VM or something of that nature. How do they know first what script to use, right? And then how in the world do they use it? Like, you know, I know you said AZ CLI, it's a CLI script. Is this something, is like a extension of the VM extension itself takes the script file and runs it? Like, what's the user experience to run the script, I suppose?
So user experience to run the script. Each script has a description of symptoms that it's been known to fix. And what it does kind of has a description there. We do have several documents outlining the already known scripts that we've approved and that are heavily used and describing when they're used, what they do in more detail, kind of really walking you through the process of using it. But if I don't have any of that and I see a VM connectivity issue or can't boot and I want to try to run this script over here, it's really simple. You run the VM repair create command, pointing with the name and the resource group of the broken VM. They'll create a copy. And just find the script ID, something like win-remove, for instance. Like that's the ID of one of the scripts. You pass that into a single parameter on the VM repair run command, passing in the target VM information that you want to run it against. So you don't accidentally run it against the one in prod, for instance. Target the cloned VM and run it. Some scripts might take a little bit longer, like one of our most loved scripts, ALAR, A-L-A-R, is used by a lot of our Linux users because it runs a bunch of different possible repairs for VM connectivity and boot issues all at once. Anyway, so you run that for a few seconds or a couple of minutes, and then you can check on that cloned VM what happened. So it's pretty simple to run scripts. If you want to write your own, you can, and you pass that in as a separate parameter. You pass in the file path to that script that you wrote, and it runs it for you.
Yeah, I think that is a good call out, though, right? Like one of the things that we are trying to really focus on is leveraging, you know, AI in Azure Portal, especially for troubleshooting and identifying, you know, potential issues with a customer's resource, right? And kind of nudging them in the direction to say, hey, we think we have the right, you know, capabilities within Copilot to really help you with this. And so we've been talking with Adam, right? Nothing to announce today, but we've been talking to Adam about how can we kind of...
Tomorrow. We'll get you back tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah, by Friday. But, you know, we've been talking about how can we not necessarily automate this workflow, but automate the creation of the scripts, automate the kind of description of each step that needs to be taken for those particular resources, automatically filling in the parameters, right, based on the context that we can gather from the customer's resources, and then kind of extrapolating that, like we were talking about before, to the support team as well. So if the support team's doing their investigation, they're looking at recent events and the status of the virtual machine, they can kind of automatically or, you know, intelligently craft a series of scripts specifically tailored for that customer to make it a more seamless process. So
and ideally, like you said, Travis, I'd want to ask a Copilot somewhere, hey, you know, which script should I use, right? And it would be able to look at all those docs that Adam was talking about, the descriptions and everything, and figure, okay, you know, from what you've described, from the snapshot, maybe I take a screenshot of the, you know, from the boot image or whatever.
Exactly,
typically,
right.
Yep. you get and drop mm-hmm. it in there and say, hey, this is what I'm getting. What should I do? And it would then do the needful. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something I also want to say is our current experience within kind of diagnosed and troubleshooting in Azure Portal is our guided troubleshooter experience for connectivity. That's one of the greatest tools customers have so far to be able to kind of identify their solution, but then have a little bit of a workflow to kind of diagnose the root cause, and then also have these scripts surface as well. For a few scripts, we do have something called a fix-it button, which is just a button that appears directly within guided troubleshooter that when clicked will automatically run that script. So that's also a few ways that customers are able to kind of get those scripts presented to them. And that's what we kind of hope to use as the foundation for our kind of AI model as well.
And you know, I mean, I think it you know, you sort of alluded to this a little bit, Adam, when you were talking about the time from last year that we will not reference. You know, but, you know, if I go back in time a little further, I remember when we had, you know, the original chip vulnerabilities got discovered back in early 2018, late 2017. You know, and I remember when we had to reboot all of Azure weekend. I think, Travis, you were around for those days, right? Or maybe just after.
We had one in 2020 that sounds very similar.
Okay. We had a couple versions of that come through. Yeah, for sure. But like, I remember we spent months trying to repair and recover all these VMs, and we just didn't have the capabilities. At that time, we weren't even analyzing the screenshot of the VM console, right? And so, you know, sort of see where we've come from. We've, you know, sort of building in these capabilities, and they get exposed to us and support, you know, and the engineering teams first, and really now pushing this stuff forward, and now having customers be able to contribute their insight, their knowledge. You know, that's a phenomenal path, you know, and where we're going, and it really just speeds up the whole cycle as we go through and do it. Adam, you know, I remember when we were checking in those scripts, I remember late at night people coming up with ideas and going, hey, can we get it checked in the next hour so that we can get the next batch of customers to run it, right? We were literally building that on the fly and getting people to run it on the fly. We would have been in a much worse place without this kind of capability at this point in our life cycle, for sure.
You sparked something in my head just now, Evan. And so if you have a VMSS setup, right, where you've got maybe 10 servers, supposedly all identical, right, and you have this problem, what's the recommended way to tackle that? Do you take one at a time out of service, do the little script thingy, and then put it back in? Like, what's the correct way to do it?
So the downtime with Veeam repair, it's very small. The only times where your VM would be like inaccessible, I guess, would be when we're copying over the OS disk or reattaching or copying back over. And generally, and that part of the script doesn't really take that long. So the downtime for your VMs is pretty minimal using VM repair, honestly, because you're mostly working on this other VM that's not even a problem. Yeah.
Correct. But you still have to do each one. Like, you have to take each data disk from each VMSS scale set, right? Instance, and do it. Like, if you have 10, you have to do the script 10 times, essentially. The process.
Yeah, you know, yeah, sorry, go ahead, Adam. My bad.
That's one of the limitations and areas that we want to improve in VM repair, because, there's not a easy way to say, hey, in this VMSS, fix all the VMs. Or that sort of kind of at scale repair. Because VM repair was always seen as, just like kind of hot fixing issues.
Right, a single VM,
Yeah, but we would like to grow into the kind of scalable stuff. And after last year and some other things that have happened, if we can hit scale with that, that would really improve our ability to just fix customer issues quickly, and so they're not bothered by anything.
And when we add in the VMSS, now we get the flexible orchestration where you can basically have pets and cattle in the same VMSS. So Adam, you got some work ahead of you to try and navigate that complexity for sure.
I'm here for it.
Great. This is a great conversation. Anything in particular important that maybe we didn't cover that y'all want to raise for the audience around these scripts, or maybe even just generally supportability in general?
Yeah, two things. One, kind of hopping on what Travis was talking about earlier, and how we can automate, use AI to improve our impact with the customer and make it just faster for the customer to be able to fix these things. It's a little scary and exciting because, as Suji was mentioning earlier, it's kind of concerning. Are we going to really let LLMs to run these scripts against resources in prod automatically with like little to no human intervention? I don't know if we're there yet. We probably aren't, but at the very
least, your VMs today, not my VMs today.
Right.
I'll explicitly say we are not there today.
No. But at the very least, and say, hey, customer, this is the plan we've generated with LLMs and our knowledge base of VM repair and other things, and we have so many diagnostics, so much diagnostic information that we can gather. That we can then tell the user or categorize the issue and say, hey, user, you have this problem. We have all this error information. We have the screenshot now. But that acting part isn't there yet. And that's something that we're really looking into. And that's where VM repair really shines, that it's literally the act of doing the fix. So we can leverage that, all that. We have so much diagnostic information we can use.
Too much and then,
and just use that to inform the act part and say, hey, here's the plan to act and fix the issue. And we can, at the very least, we can show it to the user. And maybe we can then say, once we've kind of built up a confidence where the plan that the AI, the LLM comes up with matches our expected plan, like 95, 99% of the time, then we can say, hey, user, you can just click this one button. It'll run this whole plan for you. And then maybe we can get to the point where the user can like opt in to like, okay, I let AI fix my resources automatically, maybe with a backup. In case something happens, make a backup, but the AI can do whatever it wants. Maybe in a few years,
It's common though. We just had I think I mentioned it on the show a couple weeks ago. You know, we started up a local IT pro group in my home county, and we had our first event last week, and the topic was about AI. And one of the demos that one of the co-founders did was she used a product called Cursor, if my memory is right, where she basically gave it a prompt. It wrote code. And then it went and executed that code, downloading some, you know, information from sites and hashing it and whatever. And it was super impressive about the capability. Was it the world's best code? Don't know, but it ran and it did what we wanted it to do. So maybe it doesn't need to be, you know, the fastest possible code out there, as long as it achieves the goal and it took a prompt. Right. You know, and so it's coming for sure. I think it's just a question of when, you know, again, whether it's tomorrow or Friday, you know, it's a different conversation. But absolutely.
And if you can do that when I'm sleeping, then it's already saved me time.
I was going to ask, are you tracking the usage of the tool of the ALA? So, you know, like, you know, what people are using it for, how do you improve on it? I guess, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No worries. Yes, of course. We have our telemetry on VM repair and how it's being utilized. The most popular kind of repair scripts that are out there. I mentioned one, Atlar, for our Linux users especially. And there are a few others on the Windows side. I don't remember off the top of my head right now. But we track their usage. And but more importantly, we use, kind of on Travis's side, our supportability information and kind of knowing from what our customers are experiencing, what's the hot topic or the hot button issue? Can we make a script for it? If we can, let's release it and then track its usage from there. So we really rely on our customer feedback, of course, and supportability engineer feedback to know, okay, what is the hot issue that we need to automate a fix for? And the one thing I do want to mention real quick, just to call out some of the updates that were mentioned in the email that we got in contact with, just to make sure that our customers know that, hey, we do support some new scenarios now. I mentioned some earlier, we allow private IPs now created on repair VMs. We now support non-premium disk, OS disk storage account types as well. We can also toggle trusted launch. That's more of a nested virtualization functionality to allow you to nest a VM in there and use it as a VM repair. And I think that was the last one I wanted to explicitly call out and say, hey, we do support this. I think it's about it. And there have been some other feature releases too, but those are the big ones, kind of scenarios that we didn't yet support, but now we do. So customers can now use those, and hopefully we can have new customers that are able to fix their issues automatically before it impacts their business too much.
Great. Well, no, this was awesome, Adam. You know, Travis. You know, thank you all for coming. Leslie had to drop early; she had another commitment. But appreciate y'all coming on. We will get the links posted for the audience and get the hopefully get more people using. When you see your usage go up like this, you're welcome. Great. Evan, thank y'all.
Thanks, sir.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on LinkedIn. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.